This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good morning. Thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call. Coming up this hour, we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. Brian Wacker's going to join us, New York Post, on golf's fifth major, the Players Championship, going on right now. If you didn't see it, Tiger Woods got inducted into the Golf Hall of Fame, and his daughter, Sam, gave the induction. Like, she inducted her father. She gave the speech. Very, very moving. It was amazing because Tiger Woods said that he, you know, he made a joke about losing a bet to Steve Stricker because Steve Stricker told him, when your daughter talks about you, you'll cry. And Tiger made a – why would you make a bet on that? If you're a dad, especially a girl dad, and your daughter is going to give a speech about how important you are going to weep. I don't care how strong you are. I don't care what kind of man you are. When your daughter tells you how much she loves you and how much she honors you, you're going to cry. And Tiger definitely lost that bet. But I want to ask this question because, you know, for all much respect to his comeback and everything like that, we can now sort of get an idea that, you know, the amount of 15 major championships is, that's about it. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to win another one. I don't know if he's at 51 going to win one like Phil did, but I got a good feeling he's not going to catch Jack Nicklaus in his career. Something he said from the very, very beginning that he wanted to do. Is it okay to measure greatness by just that? The way he changed the game, the way he affected the game, the way financially the game looked. Are there other things that we can look at to call Tiger Woods the greatest golfer of all time? The shots that he hit, the just the development of the game, the influence he had over the game. Now, I can say that, yeah, maybe. I wasn't watching golf in the 60s and 70s when Jack Nicklaus was doing the same thing. So I don't have anything to compare it to. When we do the Kobe, LeBron, Jordan debate, I was around for all three of those guys, but I wasn't around for Jack. Can we look at Tiger without the major total and still call him the greatest of all time? I think we can, but we'll talk to Brian Wacker about that. We'll also get more into Major League Baseball, and it is coming back April 7th, opening day. It's all coming up this hour. But the good, the bad, and the dumb is next on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, the dumb time as we continue on. Happy Friday to you, by the way. Hope you have a good weekend, especially wrapping up conference tournament weekend and, of course, Selection Sunday. And, oh, by the way, daylight savings time, which I know many of you complain about. But don't forget to move your clocks forward coming up Sunday. What's the good of the day?
The good of the day. Wheel of Fortune.
They do that again? Bad contestants again?
Well, okay, it's not really bad contestant. All right? I don't know if Pat Sajak was just in a salty mood, but I absolutely love this. This is really bad, but it's so bad that I find it hilarious and good.
Okay, now I'm very intrigued. What did he do?
He just berated a contestant.
Okay.
You ready for it?
Let's get moving. Yeah, I gotta hear this.
And I'm gonna check back on it. Not really berated it. Poor contestant. I mean, this is the beginning of the show. You know how he goes and he interviews each of the contestants beforehand? I mean, this contestant, I probably would have walked off stage crying. But here you go.
Thank you.
Hello, Scott.
Hello.
Scott Ingerson is from Upland, California. Mm-hmm. And let's hear all about your life and times. You teach improv.
I do. All the tenets of yes and observing, connecting, and responding, and having
fun. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
I know.
No, go ahead. And you perform as well.
I do, teacher, yeah? Absolutely.
What else we should know about you in your life?
Oh, I love to play piano and drums, and I've been married to my beautiful husband for 18 years.
And Why am I mentioning this? But it's on your card. You had your big toe chopped off. Why are you telling this?
Yeah, it's important to know that when I was 12 years old, I was riding a 10-speed bike with flip-flops, and I fell and completely cut off the top of my toe.
Uh-huh.
And the next car that came by were two paramedics that were on their way to their job, and they said, it's just a laceration, but I didn't know what that was, so it freaked me out even more. And my toe is reattached, and I just wanted to say thank you to them 30 years later. Thank you.
That may have been the most pointless story ever told.
Great, I'll take it.
And you told it, Scott. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. Samir, how are you? I don't know if you can top that.
Good for Pat Sajak. You know what threw me? You know what made me anti that story? When he opened it with, it's important to know.
Yeah.
It is? Is it important to know? Is my life better for it? Is it worse for it? How is it important to know that as you're solving puzzles, spinning a wheel for cash and prizes, that you had your big toe nearly cut off when you were 12?
But it was reattached. So now all you really have is a scar on your toe.
That is a weird thing. Like, if you're on Wheel of Fortune, if you're a contestant and they go, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to pad a card about you. A couple of things we just want to mention, like, what do you do? Mention your wife or your husband or whoever.
Yep.
Like, do you have any kids? Like,
say
hello to them.
You're
just going to give Pat a real brief thing. And then if you want to tell a quick, please make it quick. We don't have all day cash and prizes on that wheel. Give us, like, a quick little thing, right? And a lot of them say, hi, Pat. Yeah, my name is Jack. I've been married to Angela for 7 years. We've got three wonderful children. And in my spare time, I like to play Dungeons & Dragons.
There it is.
That's all you need.
You know, I have one of the largest collections of baseball cards.
That's right. I have one of the largest collections of baseball cards. Or one of my hobbies is fixing old cars.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Oh, interesting.
And then Pat goes, wow, that's interesting. What's the oldest car you've ever fixed up? And he goes, oh, a 1921 Duesenberg. Oh, wow, that's wonderful. Right? And then moves on to the next person. Right? This story, yeah, I would be like, I'm Pat Sajak, and why am I listening to this?
Yeah. I work 4 days a month, and this is exactly one of the things I got to put up with.
Who am I, Job? I got to put up with this torture? God, get me off this set. Vanna, you take over. God, I'll just turn the letters for crying out loud. Listen to these people talk about reattaching big toes. Good for Pat Sajak.
I mean, I just love how you preface it, too. It's like, I'm looking at this. Why am I even asking this?
Why? But yeah, right.
I'm going down this rabbit hole because I have nothing else for you.
What if Pat Sajak pulled a Casey Kasem during the break? It's like, oh, well, you know what? I was sitting here talking to these contestants and having a really good time, really good day, until somebody started talking about their big toe, and I got to talk about somebody's big toe being attached by two paramedics. I mean, for the love of Pete, I come here every single day. I want to do this job, and now you're telling me that I got to listen to a guy who's 12 years old getting his toe attached. Now back to the hits. What if, can you imagine the horror on people's faces if Pat Sajak had an off-air meltdown like that?
Yeah, I can just picture him, you know, like walking back behind the curtain, producer coming up with like a cigarette and lighting it for him.
Right.
And just go, what the hell are we doing?
Right. And they're just like, I'm sorry, Pat. I'm so sorry. Yeah. This will never happen again.
We didn't vet this good enough.
We did not sort this thing out for you. So sorry. Right? Because if you're like Sam and Irene from Iowa and you're going to L.A. to see a taping of Wheel of Fortune, the only time in your life, do you want to see Pat Sajak blow up at his staff when they go, cut? Right? You're like, okay, and we're clear. And he just starts screaming at anybody. Like, it would just break your heart if Pat Sajak.
Oh, my God. He's got to do it behind the curtain.
Exactly. All right, what's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day, Chelsea FC. You've heard of them.
It's
one of the most
prominent
football clubs in all of Europe. They call their home in the English Premier League. Well, they've had a rough go at it recently. So they're owned by a Russian oligarch.
Really?
Yeah. So...
I can only imagine how troubling that must be.
Yeah, well, it got worse for him, okay? So little backstory. Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich has been trying to sell the team, but he's not really selling the team. He's just putting it into a trust so he can reacquire it later. But then it turns out that he's actually trying to sell the team. People have posted where his house is in London or outside of London. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but it's around London. So, I mean, and he's having things seized. Money's being held up. It's been a rough go for the owner and Chelsea just being in the front page for all the wrong reasons. Well, they made the front page again because their sponsor, their shirt sponsor, if you ever notice in all the English Premier Leagues, they have a big sponsor on their chest.
Right.
And their sponsor is a telecommunications company out of Norway called Three. Well, they pulled their sponsorship mere hours before their game yesterday.
Good boy.
Leaving them to send a team manager to head to a store to go buy jerseys for the game.
Oh, God.
Now, I'm not sure if these jerseys even had numbers. So, I mean, you got to put numbers on the back. You got to put names on the back. But they had to go. They had to send them to a store to go find plain blue Chelsea blue jerseys.
By the way, can the team still make monetary decisions without him?
It's like a football club. I mean, just a regular professional team. I mean, there's people higher up, and they can do the day to day business to keep the business end going. And thankfully soccer, there's no like signing and transfer windows right now. It's just finish out the season because the season ends in a month and a half. So, but yeah, I mean, they can't do anything. If this prolongs even further, like especially when you get to the off season, they got to have a whole change.
That's what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah. I mean, if this war carries on and the sanctions still against Russia continue, he's spoken out again. Well, I can't really say he's spoken out against the war, but he is, doing the right thing by stepping aside saying, this club needs to have a future. I can't be a part of it right now.
Yeah, that's oh man, it's so complicated. And some of these sports are in these weird, complicated situations with Russian sponsorships or Russian owners,
Russian players.
Yeah, exactly. It's just
I can just only imagine. I mean, just a team manager running to
Ted Lasso. Would they put they did the tape over the sponsor that they didn't like anymore, so they just taped over.
Yeah, I could have just done that, but the problem is the three is really big on the chest.
Yeah, right.
On the
shirt.
It's from like mid chest all the way down to pretty much where the belly button is. So that's a lot of tape.
You know, one of the other funny things was the numbers thing. Did you just use marker for that, or how does
do you use masking tape?
Yeah, right. Right. Do you just make it with shapes? Like, oh God, that's sports. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
I don't know why we're back at this, but it was over Twitter. Adam Schefter even had to report on it. But apparently, Colin Kaepernick is working out, and according to one source, he's in the best shape of his life. He wants to play. He's ready to play. He would be a great fit for teams with quarterback vacancies to fill who want to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, right, of course.
And, you can watch the video. Colin Kaepernick posted it himself.
Why not?
No rush, no pads, shorts and T-shirt, dropping back, throwing passes. You never saw where the passes went, by the way.
How long has he been out of the league now?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, why are we here again?
He has tried every which way. At some point, I don't know. The league says there's no collusion. I don't buy that. I think
At this point, there's
but
not.
At this point, there isn't. Right?
At this point, it's, we've
now
moved
it's
on.
Now it's 6 years. Like, it's not happening. And by the way, I don't want to get on a real anti-Colin Kaepernick thing, because I know some of you are really, you've got strong emotions about him. But remember the workout, and then he just changed it? And like he couldn't even just go, fine, I'll go to where you want me to go and work out for you. No, he's like, nope, I'm moving it. I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like the way it's going to be videoed. He just puts these obstacles. And then you go, you want to do this? We'll do this. And then he goes, no, it's not. He throws a conspiracy out that they're out to get him. They were setting him up for failure so they can prove it. If you go in with that mindset, they can't work around that.
Yeah, if I'm him and I'm desperate and I really want to prove that I can play in the NFL again, why not play in the CFL?
Yeah,
or
right.
Or why not play in the XFL? Put your name in the lottery for that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you holding out just to play in the NFL and the NFL only has hurt you.
Right.
And now it's not collusion, because you're sitting there going, okay, well, in 6 years in this time, Colin, what meaningful game have you played?
That's a great point. If you bring him in to talk to him, you'd be like, well, why should we bring you in on board after 6 years?
Yeah.
Why should we?
Where's right? your tape?
And so
I'd rather go at this point with Mitch Trubisky, even though you might be better than him. But at least he's game ready. He's been playing.
It's like Nathan Peterman, a guy we like to make fun of.
Of course.
He's still taking at least practice snaps.
Yes.
At least he's suiting up in a uniform every day for a team, working out. He may never see the field on Sunday, but at least he's in the preparation process. And I'm supposed to just think that after 6 years, we'll just come back and it'll all be good.
And listen, a team, if there's a team that wants to sign him to their practice squad, go for it. But you just realize you're being paid the bare minimum, because I don't know what service time, what qualifies you to earn a bigger check than just league minimum at this point. It just doesn't make any sense. It's like, why would I take a chance on you when I'd rather take a chance on a college kid where there's a little more upside because there's longevity with it.
I agree completely.
So, yeah, now it's not collusion. It's just, it's getting sad.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Again, Brian Wacker's going to join us from the New York Post. We'll talk some golf because Tiger Woods inducted into the Hall of Fame. And then, of course, we kind of talk about this. We go every year, we preview or we talk about the majors, but this is golf's fifth major. So we're going to ask him about that coming up. And we'll continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Big story. So we had big stories all week. The big one coming into this morning was Major League Baseball is back. All right, so I'm admitting I was wrong. I thought that baseball would be out for a while. I was given no.
I was with you. We were that way yesterday.
No news that these guys wanted to get something done. It felt like the owners were like, no, no, no. And by the way, no. Like, it was just always, it just felt like the owners were like, we're going to break this union. We are going to go as long as we have to. We are not going to feel the ramifications of this because we're in it for the long play. And the long play is, we may suffer short term. In the long term, baseball will be back. Cities will be excited when they get into the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. And since we want to expand it and sort of make it so that more teams are in it, that means more cities will be like, and do you have baseball fever here in the metro areas? Our local team is going to the playoffs. And they know that people will rally around that. And then in return for putting up with that sort of short term anger, they'll have kind of broken the players' union, right? That's the way I thought it. But the way it went down yesterday was they were at odds on the international draft. Now, speculation on our part, and we'll probably talk more about this with Gabe Lax in hour three, the international draft, like the players didn't want it, the owners did. And our speculation was the players didn't want it because some of the young international players who come in and don't have to go, they don't go to the minors for 5 years. They don't get throttled down in Iowa for service time reasons. They come in, they make some money right away, and it does set the barrier for other salaries for certain positions, right? You get a Shohei Ohtani coming in, and there's a bidding war for him, or there's a bidding war for any international player that is coming into the majors. That sets the bar for those certain positions that they play. And so I think that's one of the reasons the players didn't want the international draft. The owners were like, wait, hold on. Let's have an international draft where then we can use those international players kind of like the way we use our high school and college players, which is stay down right there until we're ready to bring you up. And then we bring you up. And then there was that service time issue. There was one interesting thing about this. And again, like I said, I'm not going to bore you with all the numbers, with the money and all of that, because it's just, you just get lost in all those details. But there was one interesting point of contention, which was if you were a player like Chris Bryant, right, where you were kept in the minor leagues so that when you came up, you would miss the amount of service time to accrue, so you would get 1 year credit. There was a provision that said, well, if you were the rookie of the year in the National League and the American League, you get your service time at full, no matter what, right? So it made it, with the players came back with, well, if you have a player that is really good and you know he could be a candidate for rookie of the year, why not just keep him in the minors until, I don't know, July?
Right.
Right? And then bring him up and be like, well, it's clear he's not going to win the rookie of the year, but we'll get to use him for the stretch run, and he doesn't accrue the service time. Like these are the things they're talking about, right? Where the owners go, hey, you like that, right? Rookie of the year, service time, and like, yeah, no, because you'll just keep a guy in Kalamazoo until August. I'm like, oh, no, we won't. Yes, you will. And you know you will, especially if you get an extra year of the guy, and especially in the expanded playoffs when you're in the running and now could use a kid you're calling up that could have been rookie of the year, but he's not going to be rookie of the year because you brought him up too late. But you get him for August and September and into the postseason, but now he has to stay on your team for an extra year. Like, that's the things that they're hammering home. But what they did with the international draft is really interesting because they didn't resolve it. What they did was they just tabled it. So they said to the Players Association, they said to the union, okay, here's the deal. We're not gonna decide this now. So what they did was they said, look, we're going to move it to November when we'll talk about it again. But here's the thing, guys. Until we resolve that, here's something for you. And as I was saying earlier, it was like a bump in the draft pool money. There was like whatever. And again, it was like a raise in that until they resolved the international draft issue. So the players were getting something in return for letting that issue be tabled until the off season. And until they work on it, and whenever that happens, they get this benefit. But what the owners did was they said yesterday, so they were in, oh, no, Wednesday. They went into long negotiations on Wednesday, and then they said, okay, blah, 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 all of this stuff, draft pool, yeah, we'll table this issue, here's the deal. Postseason will be 12 teams. All of the things, universal DH, all the things we're working on, here's more money across the board, raising minimum salaries, all of that. And then they basically said, here's the deal, take it or leave it. And the players went, okay. And they took it to their teams. Everybody had a vote. Scott Boras's team clients all voted against it. Because Scott Boras goes, guys, it would probably be a bad thing for you to vote for this. But everybody else was like, fine, let's just get back on the field. Like, if that was the only sticking point, if we kind of came to an agreement on everything else, and we're okay with the way the numbers come, the international draft being tabled, fine. We'll get this. Four teams did not have enough votes within their players to support this, but every other team did. And so then they came out, and the owners are going to ratify it, and then we're going to have baseball. 162 games, doubleheaders till we get to the end. Season will be extended a little bit, but it starts on April 7th. And what was all the fuss about? That's what the big thing will be. What is all the fuss about?
Yep.
Now, the thing
you
about
said it best earlier. What was 99 days for?
What was the 99 days for? Right? I think there was, I think Bob Nightingale pointed this out. This was a deal that could have been done in December.
Yeah.
Like, it's nonsensical that what they ended up with is not something that they could have come. Like, when you have negotiations between management and union, You build and build and build, and you process and you process and you process, and you go through the motions and the arguing and all of that. And then you come up with an agreement that should be way different because you've heard everybody out. This sounds like a deal that the owners went, yeah, we probably could have done this in September, in December. And the players are like, we probably could have done that too. So, again, pitchers and catchers didn't report. We didn't have the, you know, hot stove league. All of the things that we normally would have had around this time and before, gone because of this.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, looking to hook up with Brian Wacker of the New York Post to talk about the Players' Championship, which is going on right now, TPC Sawgrass, and some of the golf notes, including Tiger Woods getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. A very moving moment for his daughter to deliver the sort of the speech to honor her dad in the induction. Tiger gave credit to his family and his parents for putting out a second mortgage on their house so he could play on the tour, knowing that it was hard work. Nothing was given to him. He didn't grow up rich, and he paid off the mortgage as soon as he got out of school. Well, got out, left Stanford. He didn't graduate. He left Stanford to become a professional. But I was asking this at the top of the hour, which is, you know, Tiger is the greatest golfer I've ever seen at his prime. And I think for a lot of you, it's the same way. I wasn't alive when Jack Nicklaus was winning in the 60s and even in the 70s. So I never felt there, you know, I never felt his presence like I did Tiger's, where Tiger was always in contention, always winning, winning these majors like in a bunch. And so how do we view it if he's not going to catch Jack? Brian Wacker joins us from the New York Post to talk some golf. How are you, my friend?
Morning. How are you?
Good. We talk about the TPC of Sawgrass. It's always been kind of labeled as golf's fifth major. Does it still hold true today with the world golf tournaments and different other events that are not majors? How does this stack up as one of the premier non-major events?
Well, I think you said it best right there, frankly. It's a premier non-major event. I've never really viewed it as a major. It's never been considered a major, of course. There's always been that talk and debate and so forth. But no, look, it's got the strongest fields year after year in golf at the same venue, of course, at TPC Sawgrass. So it's got a lot of the characteristics as a major championship. And, so, you know, look, maybe someday down the road it'll be viewed that way 40 years from now, 20 years from now, who knows. But look, it's a terrific event run by the PGA Tour, their flagship event, and it's certainly, I would say, a premier tournament outside of the majors, sort of that next rung of leads the way in that next rung of tournaments once you get past the big four.
When it came onto the scene, it was part of this sort of stadium course idea. Does the course still hold up in 2022 in terms of being the kind of challenge that it had been in the past?
It does, although it's certainly, we've seen it played very, very differently. You know, March versus May, of course, it was for a long time held in March, and that's when it was played. And then it moved to May for about a decade. So we've seen it plays completely different, and the course is set up completely differently in May. You'll hear some guys talk about how they like it much better in May. And oftentimes, those are the guys that simply only played it in May and grew up playing it in May. So, it plays much different in March. Of course, this year they're dealing with quite a bit of weather now. So, that's something you didn't have a ton of in May. I think the course, though, has stood the test of time. I mean, they've made some changes over the years to some of the holes. And I think you're seeing certainly a course that provides a wide array of winners. Really, there's no predictability when it comes to winning there. You know, you go to Augusta National or some of the open courses, and you can sort of cross a lot of names off the list. When you go to TPC Sawgrass, I don't think you can do that. And I think the list of varied winners, long hitters, short hitters, good putters, good iron players, it's sort of a simplistic way to look at it or statement, but it really comes down to the guy who happens to play the best that week.
Leading into this tournament, there was all that conversation about Mickelson and the Saudi Golf League and the PGA Tour. Jay Monahan spoke about this. What was your takeaway from the things he said about Mickelson, about this Saudi Golf Tour, and where the PGA stands on all of this?
Well, the PGA Tour hasn't really budged. I mean, they've been very firm and very stern in their words when talking about the Saudi Golf League, and I think we saw that with Commissioner Jay Monahan's comments this week. I think we see that with Phil Mickelson clearly taking time off, whether that was of his own accord or induced, nudged by the tour to do so. You know, I don't think we'll ever really know. Maybe one day we will, but clearly the tour has taken a hard line stance on this. And look, it's understandable. And, you know, another league comes along and tries to swoop in and steal your players. This is the stance that you're going to take. And from Phil's perspective, look, this was always about leverage. He, of course, caught a lot of flack, as he should have, for his comments made to Alan Shipnuck. And frankly, he's been banging that drum to a few reporters sort of privately over the last several months. So I am not surprised at all to see Mickelson's comments, you know, and I'm not surprised to see the backlash that he got because of it. Frankly, it was another major misstep in a career that had a number of missteps with public perception over the years. So it'll be interesting to see, though, how Mickelson recovers from this, because, of course, you go back to last year, he was the darling of golf, winning the PGA Championship at age 50. So I don't know how he recovers from this. I don't know long-term the impact that this has on his career, but it certainly seems to have impacted it in the short term.
In terms of the Saudi Golf League, I thought if you have this much, you know, these sponsors pulling out and whatnot, and Phil Mickelson sort of getting in hot water with this, that it would be dead. It doesn't appear to be dead, but is it? I mean, is this still a viable thing that could take place?
I don't know how viable it can be if you can't get at least some big names to commit to the league. Now, maybe they will be able to do that. Maybe they're trying to work on a way where you could have big names participating in that league and playing the PGA Tour, but I don't think those two things can coexist. If you're not going to get big names, you can talk about the Ian Poulters or Adam Scotts or you know, even Phil Mickelson's all you want, but if you're not going to get players who are relevant and star worthy and frankly young, then I just don't see how it's a viable product.
We talk about Mickelson a lot as a fan favorite and popular, and certainly winning at 50 years old a major would elevate that in the popularity. Is this recoverable in the near future, or do you think it takes a while before the sponsors come back and the fans come back for whoever he damaged with these comments?
Well, if there's one thing Phil has shown, it's an ability to have a layer of Teflon on him when it comes to controversial matters. Look, the sponsors will come back, of course. You know, Callaway, we have to remember, Callaway, his longest sponsor, has paused the relationship. They didn't entirely dump Phil like some of the other sponsors. Look, Phil will get sponsors back. You can look at a case, a totally different set of scenario variables, but you can look at a Justin Thomas or even a sort of a run-of-the-mill player in Scott Piercy who got into some trouble with some comments made on social media where he lost a number of sponsors, and now he has sponsors again. And Justin Thomas, of course, inking a deal with a clothing sponsor after Ralph Lauren dropped him over his comment, over his slip last January in Hawaii with the homophobic slur. So to me, you know, look, the sponsors will come back. This will blow over. And look, I think Rory McIlroy and frankly others have made a good point that, you know, Phil certainly deserves another chance. Yes, was this a major misstep in Phil's career? Did it shine the light on the fact that Phil has always largely been about Phil when it comes to matters of golf? Yes, absolutely. I think maybe people were not as attuned to that as they were previously. But Phil will get over this. He will move past this. It will be a black mark on his career. But I do not think this will be something that sticks with him in the long term. And, you know, the way we've seen with other athletes and other matters where it's really kind of dragged down their legacy, I think Phil will survive this ultimately.
I want to ask you about Tiger Woods' Hall of Fame induction. Mm. And very emotional. And it was kind of fun to watch, to see him in that kind of father-like with his daughter giving her induction speech and whatnot. Mm. But in all sports, we have different ways of measuring who's the best of all time. In golf, is it about majors? I mean, he's likely not to get to the level where Jack Nicklaus is, but can we still view the other things around Tiger that make him the greatest of all time?
Absolutely. Look, you know, the way I sort of look at it is that Jack Nicklaus is the greatest major champion or maybe greatest player of all time, but Tiger Woods is intact, transcended the sport in a way that nobody has, frankly. Right? He spawned an entire generation of golfers. He made golf cool and, of course, broke the color barrier. So, I mean, becoming the first black player to win the Masters. So from that standpoint, Tiger has a completely transcendent legacy that goes far beyond the wins and losses, or the wins rather, 15 major championships. You look at what he did at Augusta a couple of years ago, winning number 15 there. And frankly, you know, if it weren't for some of the injuries, many of which were self-induced, who knows how many majors he would have. And I don't think anybody doubts that. So to me, I think Tiger will go down. You look at the winning percentage, right? Tiger's winning percentage at the height of his career versus the winning percentage of Jack at the height of his career, Tiger's is better. So to me, Tiger goes down as the GOAT, not just for all the victories, all the majors, but how he changed the sport. This is a global icon in a way that this sport had never seen before. He was essentially Michael Jordan, you know, Magic Johnson, the Dream Team, however you want to put it. He was all of that rolled into one and a global icon in the game.
Brian, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. And again, enjoy the Players' Championship and the Masters in a couple weeks.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Brian Wacker, the New York Post, again, joining us to talk some golf. And a point about Tiger Woods, I think, is we do this a lot in sports. We always have, and it's fun. It especially like quarterbacks in the NFL, right? With Tom Brady now, when he's now exceeded it. But remember when he had like three titles and four, and you were kind of like, well, how does he compare to Joe Montana's four? And Dan Marino never won one, and John Elway won two. Like we have different metrics that we use, and we do it in sports, right? Whether it's Jordan six, but it's also 6-0, and like the way we do all that, it's a numbers game rather than a feel, right? Like it's statistical rather than there's a larger body of work here. Again, Tiger is not likely to catch Jack Nicklaus. He's 46. He's coming off a massive leg injury. I have no idea if he'll return. I think he will ceremoniously. I don't think he'll ever be the kind of competitive player. He might sneak a major in, like at the British Open at 51. He's that good of a player. You never know. But it's more than that, right? It's more than just numbers on a stat sheet that shows Jack's got this many and Tiger's got this many. Even if we've all kind of went down the road with Tiger from his youth. I mean, think about this for a second, right? If Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, John Rahm, Jordan Spieth, if anybody had the career that Tiger Woods has had in terms of just major championships, kind of people you've never heard of, you know, maybe if you're deep into golf and you know the juniors, right, or the college golfers. But if you're just an average golf fan and you see these young kids and they're winning all the time, like Tiger did, right? Complete the career grand slam and at 24 and have all four titles in your hands in one calendar year, all of those things, what would we be saying about them today? Would we be putting them in that category? Likely not. Likely not. But Tiger was a different golfer because Tiger was on the Mike Douglas show when he was 3 years old. He's been in our public eye for a long time.
You know where Tiger kind of fits in my eyes is, you know, and it's to that credit of, you know, you can have a successful golfer, but he's not going to be on the same page as Tiger or the same level. And that is Muhammad Ali.
Right, right.
Because there were a lot of great fighters that Muhammad Ali fought against.
All right, let's explore that when we come back in the final few minutes of this show, because I think that's a very, very good, a good comparison. When we come back, it's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Ron, you made a good point about Muhammad Ali, about Tiger Woods. There is a sort of public infatuation with certain athletes when they achieve excellence that elevates them to another place.
Yeah.
And that, and again, Tiger delivered. Like, Tiger delivered everything. Muhammad Ali delivered when he won, you know, in the Olympics. He delivered. When you have a lot of attention on you and you then you're able to capitalize on that and do the things people thought you were going to do, it takes you to another place rather than a guy coming out of nowhere. Well, when I say nowhere, I mean like your average Joe is not following college golf, right? And then one day you wake up and a 22-year-old's winning the Masters, right? Like that's what I mean. But you're right about Muhammad Ali.
I mean, we thought, you know, Muhammad Ali goes down as the greatest boxer ever. Right? He lost plenty of times.
Sure.
He lost championships plenty of times. But it's just the fact of, you know, the expectation of what he could accomplish. You know, like you said, he always delivered. It outweighed any of the negative stuff that we saw. And there was controversy with him, too. But he became a global icon because of who he was and what he was able to do in the ring.
Yeah, I was good friends with Bert Sugar, who used to come on my show a lot, boxing historian, boxing analyst. And we talked about Muhammad Ali's legacy one time. And he says boxing purists will say he's not the best, like, technical fighter of all time. He definitely goes down on the list for everything that he brought to the table. Everything. He did have the speed and whatnot. There is nobody like him. There was nobody else like him on a global stage, a sports stage, political stage. There was nobody like him in the sport of boxing. And I think Tiger, you have to put all of those into the way he influenced the world in the game of golf is important.